town was fine.
Thank you. Session, Judge Flory, Judge Connolly, Judge Bjorkman, the Honorable James B. Flory presiding.
Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. All right. The next cases on our calendar is a consolidated appeal, A18-1875, 1881 and 1891, in the matter of the welfare of the child of LME, BEE, and CDK. We're here for oral argument today. Council, I'm sure you're familiar with our rules. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Council for appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal, if you wish. You can adjust the podium to your comfort level and identify yourselves for us, if you would, please, as you begin your arguments. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Ann Carlson, on behalf of appellant mother LME, I do request 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
The issue before the court is whether or not the district court erred in finding clear and convincing evidence that the parents failed to correct the conditions that led to out-of-home placement pursuant to Minnesota Statute 260C.301, Subdivision 1, Paren B, Paren 5. In this case, I believe the record supports that, or shows that the reason that the children were removed from the home is because the home was messy. It was in severe disarray.
Was it really that narrow, Ms. Carlson? I mean, messy might have been the obvious result, but it seemed like the judge relied on a lot of other factors as that contributed to the messiness, or caused perhaps the messiness of the home, including the issues with the parents and things. So I'm wondering if it really is that narrow in terms of what the court found.
I believe that the removal was because, obviously, there were concerns leading up to the removal. And a lot of those concerns had to deal with the fact that the parents were not accepting of services that were being voluntarily offered to them by the agency. Services that were offered that were presumed to be in the children's best interest, that they would engage in some at-home services and out-of-the-home services. However, without the messy house, I don't believe that there was a cause for removal in that there wasn't anything that was endangering the children.
So if they had hired a housekeeper, would that remove all concerns that the agency legitimately had about the parents' ability to safely take care of these children?
I believe at the time that the CHIPS petition was filed, that at that time it would have been enough to correct the conditions that led to the basis of the CHIPS petition, or at least that led to removal. A housekeeper, yes. The house had animal feces on the floor and was very cluttered, boxes stacked, and there was a 2-year-old child who was not being given room to explore the house. So my understanding of the facts would be that when the children were removed, that was the reason was the house. And I don't believe that up until that happened, there was proof that the children were endangered in any way, that their needs weren't being met, that they weren't being properly cared for. Although once CPS became involved and got to know the parents, new concerns arose. And they were able to.
And that's not unusual, is it? I mean, I think back to my years as a district court judge and the children that came to the court's attention, for example, they weren't attending school. And that would be the ground for the CHIPS petition, but it wasn't what was causing them, per se, to be in need of services. It was the parents' inability for reasons, you know, ranging from mental health issues to substance abuse issues, et cetera, that's why they weren't getting to school. I mean, I just don't understand, as Judge Flory asked, why we would so narrowly construe the reason for the removal. Is there case law that supports such a narrow interpretation?
It's my understanding of the record. I don't have case law that backs that up. But I believe that they wouldn't have had cause but for the messy house. And I believe that once CPS got involved, the parents were accepting of services that were offered. They were compliant with the case plan. The only component of the case plan that the court found that they were not accepting of was a somewhat removed component of the case plan. It was to follow a psychological assessment's recommendations and to obtain guardians. I struggled in wrapping my head around subparent B5 and understanding the difference between how you apply the statute on its face and how you apply the presumption. So in my argument that there was an implied finding that they failed to substantially comply with the case plan, I was wrong about that, I realized after further research.
Ms. Carlson, I guess to that point, wasn't there testimony that, or at least in the evidence of the district court's order, that as it relates to the child BJD, the social worker stated the appellants did not seem to understand that the child was developmentally delayed due to the conditions in the home. That's not just a messy house. And I mean, where in the record does it indicate that that self-awareness changed? Because, I mean, I seem to recall also, like, they weren't giving the child the medication. I mean, it seems to me, you know, because of the issues relating to the parents and their own disabilities, it was more sort of they didn't understand what they didn't understand.
And did they gain that insight throughout the course
of
working?
And it seems to me the thrust of the court's order was they really didn't, and that was the thrust for the termination of the parental rights.
I mean, I believe that they substantially complied with the case plan, but for the obtaining of guardians.
Okay.
I believe that guardianship is, I just struggle with getting guardianship.
No, look, I would agree with you. If this case was solely about whether or not they got guardians, you know, that's probably insufficient depending on what else is going on. But, you know, again, I thought the thrust of it was they just couldn't understand what these children needed and couldn't provide it and didn't understand why they didn't understand it. And as a result of that, the children were at risk.
To a certain degree, their inability to understand had a lot to do with the fact that in Mille Lacs County, we didn't have resources that could really serve these parents. And I understand that the agency made efforts to get some of these resources in place, but they weren't able to find some of the resources until shortly before the TPR trial with the supervisor.
And they did. I mean, there was an extended period of time. I mean, as I understand that there was over a year between the removal and the TPR trial. So, I mean, and I agree with you that some of the services were late in coming. But my concern is that even with not just supervised parenting time, but supportive parenting time, there didn't seem to be any improvement, if you will, in the parents' ability to read the cues and to deal with the children.
But I don't know that a failure to read cues of your children or to quickly respond to their indications that they would like to, like assistance using the bathroom, I don't know that that's grounds for removal, let alone TPR. And I think that's what I got from the court's order is they were slow to respond to cues. That's not ideal, but a few children would be reared by their parents if model parents were the standard. I believe that if the parents had been given more assistance in understanding how to parent, and really the record indicates the woman, Wendy Heath Jackson, who works at Lighthouse and was to provide some supervised parenting time, doesn't have training with regard to how to assist parents with developmental delays in better understanding how to respond to their children's cues. I don't know that a service was made available up until very shortly before the TPR trial that would enable the parents to gain any sort of skills in that area.
So you're arguing as a basis for reversal that the county's efforts were not reasonable? I don't see that necessarily in your brief, so I'm wondering if that is an argument you're advancing.
I'm arguing that the evidence isn't clear and convincing that the agency or that the efforts of the agency failed to correct the conditions that led to removal. I don't believe you would, or rather, on my reading of it, you probably would not be able to reverse on the basis of the agency failed to make reasonable efforts. However, it is worth considering that because of the location of where this took place, there weren't services available that might be available in another county, might be available in Ramsey or Hennepin County that would enable the parents to improve their parenting ability. They just didn't have those services.
Or they came late in the game.
Or they came so late in the game that by the time we were able to locate these service providers, we were already scheduled for a TPR trial. And that was through no fault of my clients or her partners. Once the agency removed the children, they were willing and accepting of all the services that were offered to them. And attending the supervised visits and going to therapy getting the psychological assessment, doing what was asked of them. They were making efforts to improve their parenting ability. I just don't know that those services were available that would have been able to allow them to do it. But my argument is that the conditions that form the basis of the CHIPS petition have been corrected or were corrected by the time of the TPR trial. If there are no further questions, I would yield the rest of my time.
Nothing further. You'll have your 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Heather Griesert, Special Assistant Mille Lacs County Attorney, here on behalf of Mille Lacs County Community and Veteran Services. I want to start with an example that I think answers your question, Judge Borkman, about whether or not the agency made reasonable efforts and answers all of your questions about whether or not the parents made changes that demonstrated that they were able to parent the children at the time at the end of the case. And that example is in page 265 of the transcript, and I reference it in my brief on page 14. And here's what it is. During a supportive parenting, or it's actually an observed parenting time session, the child BJD had a toilet knitting accident. He became upset. He had been potty trained and had been successful in his toileting. And so during that observation time, he started crying and was weeping and upset about this happening. Parents were there. His older sibling, ERE, was there, as well as the Ms. Heath Jackson that you heard about, the supervised parenting time worker. Child continued to cry, and ERE got up, walked over to him, crouched down at his level, and talked to him, telling him it was okay, that they all made mistakes. She is the one who went and consoled the child, not the parents. LME mom remained seated next to Ms. Heath Jackson, and Ms. Heath Jackson acknowledged in her testimony that she attempted to console the child from her position in the room. Father was on the couch, and he attempted to console the child from the couch. Only ERE got up and addressed him. And I think that's significant for many reasons. Number one, because as Ms. Carlson pointed out, she doesn't think that the services addressed the parents' developmental delays. ERE has an IQ of 44. Her parents, or her mother actually, LME, has an IQ of 54. And the father, CD, has a full IQ scale of 66. If the 14-year-old ERE, whose services weren't targeted towards, could learn in the period of 6 months between when they started this supervised or supportive parenting time how to go over the child to the child, crouch down, and reassure him, there's no reason that service couldn't have been successful for the parents who had a higher IQ, more life experience, more investment, and the teaching was targeted to them. It was a conversation with them for those months. ERE, just by being in the same room in proximity, was able to gain and demonstrate that task. And throughout the case and the transcript and the court's order, the parents weren't. And so I think that demonstrates that they did not correct the conditions that led to out-of-home placement, number one. And number two, it demonstrates that the agency did make reasonable efforts. What happened with the supportive parenting time was a process. When the children were removed, they began straight supervised parenting time, just an observation time at Lighthouse. The same supervisor, Ms. Jackson, was with them the entire time. When it became apparent that the parents couldn't engage in that, couldn't keep the children safe, BJD was becoming dysregulated, ERE was sitting in a corner not engaged in the parenting time session, the agency met with Lighthouse and the providers, talked to them about how to help this family. In what way can we meaningfully help this family? And they developed this plan about supervised parenting time. Yeah, that service isn't available in Mille Lacs County. It's not available in any of the surrounding counties. It was something designed for this family through cooperation with a provider. And you know what? That's the gold standard in reasonable efforts, in my opinion. That is thinking outside the box, not just taking what's available, and making something and creating something that works for a family. And it was demonstrated it did work or could work. It didn't work for the parents, but it could work.
And maybe they just didn't have enough time to let it work. I mean, I'm troubled because it does appear from this record that the parents made efforts to comply with all of the services and requirements that were imposed under the court-approved case plans, and yet the court and the agency seem to really focus on one aspect, and that is the failure to pursue guardianships. What evidence in the record suggests that they would even qualify for guardians, the parents in this case?
So two things. I want to talk first about a question that you had about services. Number one, the supportive parenting time and observed parenting time alternating started in January of 2018, so 8 months before trial. The service that the court asked about and some services were started late, the only service we weren't able to implement prior to trial was the independent living services. And that's not a service that is targeted at parenting. That is something where parents identified that they wanted help budgeting and grocery shopping and planning meals. So that service in and of itself would not have modified their parenting. With respect to the guardianship, there is evidence in the record that guardianship was appropriate. Number one, Brunetti recommended it. He felt the parents met the standard for guardianship. Mille Lacs County Community and Veteran Services social worker Connie Hodder, who does the MIN Choices assessments, also indicated that they would have qualified given their assessments and their needs for guardianship. Their medication manager, Carissa Inganuski, apologize, also indicated that when they brought her the paperwork, she felt they met criteria for guardianship and she would have supported and signed off on the medical statement with respect to guardianship, except that the parents were very clear with her that's not what they wanted to do. And she felt that she needed to preserve that relationship with them because they needed help with their medication and they needed to continue that she wasn't going to sign that medical statement over their wishes at that time. Her testimony was that had the children been in the home, she most likely would have done so because at that point it wasn't just about the parents, that it was going to affect the family, but where they were at in their therapeutic relationship, she just felt the costs of that outweighed the benefits, but that it would have been appropriate. And with respect to guardianship, I think, Judge Connolly, you touched on it, that had this just been about guardianship, we wouldn't have been at TPR trial. But it was more than that. It was about their ability to attend to the children. And they couldn't do that for a 90-minute supervised parenting time or supportive parenting time session. They were disengaged, and the the testimony was that they were disengaged long before that 90 minutes was up, and as the case progressed, they became less and less engaged with their time. They were finishing up 20 minutes ahead of time. Given the needs of the children, and when you talk about how this impacts the children, at the time of the removal, BJD could hardly walk. He was developmentally delayed, and that wasn't just about the house being cluttered. It was because the parents didn't have the skills to do anything or consistently do more with him other than put him in the high chair because he was contained and they could watch him there. And so he wasn't getting out, even if the house had been clean, he wasn't getting out to explore and to develop physically those skills. They also didn't have the verbal skills to teach him how to express his emotions, and so he was headbanging. And there is testimony that even after removal and the supervised parenting time, because of how the parents were unable to engage during those parenting time sessions, BJD was having dysregulated behaviors after visits. He was going back to foster care and screaming, "No mom, no dad." He was wiping his feces on himself during supportive parenting time. He was yelling at them at times, telling them out and that wanting them out of the room. He very clearly was expressing that their behavior was affecting his emotional health. And it's also clear that their behavior was affecting ERE's emotional health. She talks about, to many people, about how mom didn't make her, she didn't feel mom loved her. Mom wasn't helping with her self-worth because she felt ignored. At the time, or shortly before removal, ERE had been hitting father's CD in this case, so BJD's father, and being physically aggressive with him. And so these children were endangered by how these parents were failing to act and failing to see those emotional and physical needs, quite frankly, of the children and addressing them appropriately.
Was there any evidence presented to the trial court regarding whether the parents intended to continue to follow through with services once the court proceedings terminated?
The only specific evidence that I can recollect, Your Honor, is a statement from LME that she did not continue, did not believe she needed to follow through with medication management once the county was out and once the case was done, that she didn't feel she needed medication, she didn't feel she needed therapeutic interventions, and so she intended to discontinue at least that service. When you consider their behavior prior to removal, discontinuing services for ERE, discontinuing the public health nurse for BJD, certainly say there's indication that they may not have continued to engage in those services, that what they were doing as far as parenting time was a means to an end and not necessarily a true investment in changing how they parent. LME said many times throughout the case that she could live on her own, she could do things on her own. And I think, quite frankly, her defensive approach to the services inhibited her ability to fully engage and be able to apply those skills. Because again, when you think about that example, her IQ is higher than ERE's, and so she has the intellectual ability to have modeled those behaviors, and yet she wasn't able to learn them. And so something else was providing that barrier for her to be able to demonstrate that she had corrected those conditions. In sum, I think that the trial court was very thorough in her findings in this case. Not only did she detail the services that had occurred prior to removal, she detailed the circumstances at the time of removal, which again, as the court has pointed out, more than just the condition of the messy house. It was about these children's physical and emotional well-being. And she talked in detail about all of the services that were referred, as well as the agency's efforts to ensure that those services were successful. I gave you one example at the outset, but that included, in addition, providing transportation. Going to those evaluations, Ms. Coyle read part of those evaluations to the parents to make sure that they...
I had one question, Ms. Greaser. It's my understanding that even post-intervention by the department, that there were still issues in seeing to it that the child received its necessary medication relating to the seizures. Is that a correct statement?
No.
Okay.
And
so
here's
they had
why.
Gotten that under control.
Had the parents gotten, or
yes,
was it
parents,
corrected after?
The
no, the parents had not gotten under control. At the time of removal, the ERE was on blister packs, and when the blister packs were taken with the child, there were doses that had not been opened. Those blister packs are set per day and then per time of
and
day.
And then once the department got involved, did they? Was there an improvement on getting the medication to the children?
Yes.
Okay.
The ERE consistently had medication, and the reason I initially said no is that by the time of the case, the child had been reevaluated for seizures and no longer needed that medication. But yes, immediately after removal, she was appropriately and consistently medicated.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so about with the department, Ms. Coyle read the evaluations. They provided transportation. Prior to removal, she had done a very simple checklist for the parents. And when we talk about meeting their needs, just simply, I think it said vacuum and wash the dishes to try and help them be successful and maintain the children in the home. The blister packs is another good example. But this is a case where those reasonable, and I truly believe that the department went beyond reasonable and applied the gold standard of efforts in this case, and went beyond, did as much as they possibly could, located, tried to locate services, and even considered relocating the family for full family foster care, just to assist them as best as possible. But that those reasonable efforts didn't correct the conditions that led to out of home placement, and therefore, TPR was in the children's best interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Greaser. Ms. Carlson, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I am hearing an argument that child one learned parenting ability from these supervised visits, and I think that's inaccurate. It's not that child one learned how to become a more empathetic person because she was witness to the parenting interventions or the supervised parenting time from Wendy Heath Jackson. That's a new argument, and I would disagree with it. I think what...
You know, I mean, as I understood the argument, it was... We're providing all these services. The parents can't seem to get it, even though the children can. So it shows how worse off. Well, I guess it shows the futility, because you know, I mean, at least I understand that's what the argument is. Not so much like, well, the children are better parents than the parents, but you know, the parents are not making any progress, whereas the child with some issues can at least do this, which shows how, you know, bad, well, not bad, what's the word, how the parents are just not going to get there in the time allowed.
And I heard that child one is empathetic and that the parents are not, and I don't think that that's a result of the services that were provided to the family.
No, that's a fair point, Ms. Carlson.
But we have to be especially hesitant about terminating parental rights when it comes to parents that have developmental disabilities, because that is through no fault of their own.
I agree.
And
the district court was careful about saying just that.
That we have to be careful. And even if we are to find that it serves the children's best interest that they not be returned to the home of the parent, that doesn't necessarily mean that a termination of parental rights is the correct outcome, especially when a child is 15 years old. You know, to sever a relationship that the child has had with her mother for 15 years and say you're not going to have any contact for the next 3 years, it's extreme and it's incredibly harsh, considering the circumstances were that mother was trying to gain parenting skills. She was trying to improve her behavior, and she was trying to do what was being asked of her. with the exception of the guardianship. I don't believe there was enough on this record to support a finding that the parents need guardianship. The reason I say that is because their needs were being met for all intents and purposes from what I was able to tell. And I don't believe that a parent who is able to say, I don't want a guardian, I don't believe I need one, should ever be forced into that position by way of case plan. Had the parents applied for guardians or obtained guardians, the agency wouldn't have returned the children to their care either way. I don't think that that would have been enough for them to say, okay, well, now you've complied with the case plan, you've gotten your guardians, and now we're going to give you return your children back to your care. I also think this argument about child one feeling ignored by mother is, of course we want what's in the best interest of children, but we're asking for a standard of perfect parenting by saying we want the parents to be empathetic, we want the parents to be, what we really need is for the parents to be capable of meeting the needs of the children and keeping them safe. On this record, I believe that the provision of in-home services, maybe out-of-home services, would be able to ensure the children's safety if returned to the care of their parents. I don't believe that there's evidence that they would be unsafe if returned to their parents' care, and I believe that the evidence is not clear and convincing that the parents failed to correct the conditions that led to out-of-home placement.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. And thank you, counsel. We have your briefs in the matter and have reviewed those, and we will have a decision in the matter for you within 90 days. Thank you.